Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a second podcast in the same week. We did it, Bob. This is the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Happy Friday, or as I like to call it, Fry-yay.
Other people like to call it that too, Matt, so I can't blame just you. I'm a bit injured today. I have a stupid dog injury. You ready for this one?
Yep.
I took the dog out to do what dogs do, and I was coming back in the house. Dog was on a leash, and so my head was focused towards going through the door, and a dog went by, like another one, on the sidewalk. And Opal ran after her, and I didn't see it coming, and she just yanked my arm.
Right.
Heard my neck crack.
Oh.
So I'm a bit stiff today, but it's hard to train a dog. And I think especially during COVID, because there's just not a lot of services out there. We wanted to get a dog trainer. It's hard to find somebody who will do it.
Yep. So is it too late now for Opal? Has she passed the point?
No, but we're getting there though. We're getting there. She's like she's like drafting right now, a senior out of college.
Oh,
where it's not technically too late, but your rate of return is generally, you have to put some boundaries on your expectations.
Yeah, if it's 1987, take that senior. If it's 2021, the senior says bench depth, and I'll get you a rebound.
You know, we're obviously burying the lead here, so let's not do our usual Bob and Matt thing, and let's actually let people listen to us talk about Kyle Lowry, since the whole city was on pins and needles for 48 hours.
Let's do it. The big story: Kyle Lowry not going anywhere. And from everything you know, that Masai Ujiri was comfortable making a deal, but there was just no deal out there. There was no return that he thought was worthy of it. And he kind of sent a message that as long as he's around, he's not going to take bullshit deals.
I love that. Don't you love that? Wasn't that gangster?
Yeah.
So there's a few ways to look at this. We can get to the other teams involved in the chase in a bit, but just as a Raptors fan, how do you feel about that?
Mixed emotions, you know, they like, because there was no definitive move, I don't have a definitive emotion. I get why he did it. There's still an excellent chance at the end of the year that Kyle Lowry just walks and there'll be no return for Kyle Lowry. There'll be no tangible assets coming back, just like there wasn't any with Kawhi or Ibaka or Gasol. So it is mixed emotions. On the other end, hey, great. You know, we get to be, you know, entertained more than we would have been if Lowry was traded. So there is some, it's like short term, this is fine and good. Long term, a lot murkier.
Yeah, that's a good way to summarize it. And there's a lot to unpack there. Your point about losing Kawhi, losing Danny Green, losing Serge, losing Gasol, the mainstays of this championship team haven't yielded any assets as they've gone out the door. And that's makes it pretty tough to rebuild when you're not flipping those for your future. So getting something for Kyle would have been nice, but if the deal's not there, like I didn't want to see him go and then look at Dennis Schroeder in a Raptors uniform for 2 months as my payback, or Kentavious.
Yeah, Pope is a nothing. Schroeder's a good player who's probably gone. He's an unrestricted free agent. Right. And let's say you get some sort of draft pick. I don't know even when the Knicks and the Lakers have a first round pick. But let's say they do at some point soon. That pick is going to be 27th, 28th.
It's a great point. And it's just not enough. And this was ultimately Masai's point. I felt like I was cheering for the Raptors to lose. This is what makes this so confusing for me. I was mentally in a place where I was ready to cheer for the future, which means maybe turning a blind eye to the present. But that's because I was 100% sure Kyle was gone.
Yes.
Now that he's back, there's no choice but to cheer for the present, because I don't think we're going to get a particularly great. We're too good to be bad. and we're too bad to be good. So we might as well catch a few breaks and have some fun.
Yes. At this point, unless guys are really nowhere near back from COVID, but everyone looked great against Denver. So yes, they're not going to, this team is not built to get a top 10 pick. So if it's not built for that, then hey, guns are blazing. Let's go out, try to win as many games and at least scare the shit out of the NBA Eastern Blue Bloods.
If we could play a Philly or a Milwaukee and push them to a game seven, even if we lose, I think it would show dignity on our part. And we're playing for dignity at this point. The mere fact that Norm Powell got dealt for a guy and not a prospect or a pick tells you they're not ready to cash in on this team just yet. Like they, Gary Trent Jr. may not be as good as Norm on paper right now, but his deal is better and he's not about to become incredibly overpaid the way Norm is about to become. So they clearly took a step forward thinking, we got a pretty nice asset back for Norm. And so, I mean, he's younger, but even still, it didn't feel like they were just, it wasn't the Orlando Magic just basically giving up everybody for picks. By the way,
yeah. We'll get to
Magic later. What a disaster that was. But I think the team's pretty comfortable saying we're not this bad and we're going to turn it around.
And the thing is, there's evidence for it. You know, that 2-8 start, if they played 5% better and just so much bad luck, and then they looked really good and they beat Milwaukee back to back and they beat Philly and they made life miserable for Joel Embiid and everything was looking good. And then COVID hit and all the plans went right down the drain. So yes, there is a version here, but this, Bob, goes to me, it goes to the bigger question that I want to throw out to you.
Mm-hmm.
It feels to me they're doing this because in their minds, the development of OG and Siakam, and it's just those two, the development will be heightened with a run, that these guys will develop into better players if during the rest of this regular season that the stakes are higher and the games mean more, and that hopefully this has some sort of tangible, positive impact years down the road when OG Anunoby can say, yeah, I grew as a player in April of 2021 when the team said, we're going for it. I had more responsibility. I learned to be a better player. Like, that's kind of what they're doing here.
I think there's truth to that. Although I would say it's not like the Edmonton Oilers where you draft first a whole bunch of times and you got young guys who just get too used to losing, and that arguably impedes their progress. Both OG and Pascal have been in some pretty intense situations. I don't know how much more seasoning they really need at this point. You know, Pascal's played in some finals games. I don't think he needs much more experience.
One pushback is that when Siakam, and you're right, but Siakam was the third or sometimes fourth best player. Now he's got the games with stakes, but he's the best player, and OG is the third best player.
So let me ask you this then, because your theory makes sense if they believe they want Pascal's usage to go up significantly. Do you think they want Pascal's usage to go up significantly?
Yes, I do. I think they absolutely want that. They want him taking, and by the way, so far it's failed. 0-for-4 in shots in the last like 15 seconds or whatever the stat is, and it's failed. And I don't know if this plan's going to work, but this must be their plan. If they're like, no, we're going to go for it. Forget trying to get better assets for the future. We believe to help our future, we need to do more to develop our present.
The OG thing is weird. He's had a strange career so far. Injuries and time off and personal matters. COVID, the team made this amazing run. He was hurt. Like, he's just had a weird career. I mean, even this year where it was supposed to return to normal was the least normal year. So I still don't feel comfortable saying who I think OG is. My gut tells me he's not as good as Raptors Twitter thinks he is, but he's better than a lot of people in the league probably thinks he is.
That's fair. Yeah.
You know, I feel like he's going to be a good player. And that's all we really need him to be, is a good player. Pascal, well, you know my ceiling is the Donovan Mitchell theory that we talked about. The Pascal's interesting. You know, look, can we take a quick second, get away from trade deadline and just talk about Pascal? Because I feel like were it not for the Lowry and Norm drama, the city would be on fire because of the Siakam Nurse blow up.
Oh, of course. Listen, all roads lead to Pascal Siakam when talking about the Raptors. All roads lead there.
He got into a match. It's Rogers Alert, mobile data services on. Well, I can look at this later. That was for you. By all accounts, nobody wants to say what was said, but we get the general theme of what happened. But it sounds like it was pretty bad, and it was bad enough. Like, think about when Kadri was late. You know, it wasn't like the first time he was ever late. They finally blew up at him and suspended him, right? Knowing that the city would be watching that situation like a hawk. And that was kind of like a last chance you kind of move, you know? I don't think they're quite at last chance with Pascal, but they're clearly not trying to protect him. And if you're not trying to protect your underperforming and sensitive superstar, then you're ready to get rid of them soon. Like you're fluffing up the pillows for the possible move because you're ready to give up on them. That's my opinion.
Yep. Listen, and what Siakam has to realize, you got paid. You got that money. You believe that you are a star. And what level star? Who knows? Full superstar, starlight, somewhere in between, whatever. Well, you can't be invisible. You can't on a Sunday against Cleveland take two shots and have no points in the third quarter against a bad team. You got to go out there and wring the necks of the bad teams, and you've got to at least hold serve when there's a star on the other side. And Siakam hasn't done enough of that.
You know what he's not good enough to be? He's not good enough to be an enigmatic superstar. Kyrie Irving is good enough to be an enigmatic superstar in that he's gone from the team again. These guys are gone from the team again, but you put up with it because he might be one of the five most talented guys in the league. Pascal doesn't have the talent luxury to be enigmatic. He's going to have to be a hard worker, and he's going to have to be an apply my craft every day kind of superstar. And if there was ever a model for that, it's Kyle Lowry, who turned himself from a talented player into a superstar and a probable Hall of Famer because he just decided, I'm going to make the most of this. And Pascal has to do that. He can't be an F up and still get by. You remember, I see this now with kids, right? Because my, you know, not to bring this back to my family, but like with my daughter, and I see all these kids, and I see the patterns of behavior starting. And you remember those kids that were super smart, and so they didn't try, and they still did pretty good?
Yes.
We tend to glorify that in our society because we have an obsession with talent. Those kids almost never do the best out of that class. They might have done the best, but they almost never do. Because the best thing you can learn is how to learn and how to work. And if you have talent, that's a blessing from the universe. Be thankful. But it doesn't replace work. Ever. So Pascal just has to be like Kyle.
Absolutely. The effort has to be there. And his presence must be felt. You know, I mean, it's not like you need every possession where, you know, Siakam's a beast, but you need Siakam to be a star, to work hard, to be at the free throw line, to not get discouraged when a couple shots don't go in. You know, he's got to solve the puzzle on a nightly basis of what do I need to do to get my team a win?
You know how people always said LeBron could probably dominate in the paint more, but sometimes he doesn't because he just wants to play a different kind of game and be more of a facilitator.
Yeah.
You can get away with that if you pass like LeBron, who might be the best passing big man since Magic. You can't get away with that if you're Pascal. Your advantage is that you're quick and you're tall. Play GD tall. Do you remember Ralph Sampson?
Yes.
For the Houston Rockets, do you remember how tall Ralph Sampson was?
He was a beast.
He was 7'4", and he and Akeem made up the Twin Towers. And I remember hearing that the weird thing about Sampson was in the beginning of high school, he was 6'1", and he played it as a guard. And then he had this massive growth spurt, obviously, but he never stopped seeing himself as a guard. And so as great as he was in the league, and he was great, he could have been all-time great, but he didn't want to be 7'4". He wanted to be 6'4". we need Pascal to want to be 6'9", not 6'1".
And we need, yeah, and we need him, and at some point, we need him to be that guy at the end of the games. Just on a on a consistent basis, to be that guy at the end of games. And he hasn't been. And it's one of the big reasons why the Raptors started 2-8. It's one of the reasons, not the only, but it's one of the contributing reasons the Raptors have this losing record. It's Pascal Siakam, and that's normal in the NBA. You have a star player, you pay them a lot of money. If they don't perform, it's going to be difficult for the team to have a good year.
I would be inclined to say, let's not pile on this guy because of the Tampa factor, because of the COVID factor.
There's yes.
So many things. And maybe we're going to find out somewhere down the road that he's fraying, and he's fraying the way we're all fraying. And he's just a smart, sensitive guy in a bizarre situation who's responding negatively to it. Entirely possible. All these problems really go back to the bubble. He came back. He was never the same. He hasn't been the same. So who knows? I want to give a guy a free pass, but I will say this. Maybe I'm being an alarmist, Maddie, but I take it as a warning signal that they were willing to air their dirty laundry in public. That, to me, is always the sign of an organization that either feels they need to ratchet up the lesson that they're trying to teach to a guy, or they're trying to send a message like, we will not protect you past a certain point, buddy, which tells me behind the scenes this is probably worse than we know it is. I was listening to a podcast. A bunch of guys were talking about Jerry Sloan, the old Utah Jazz coach, and how he would offer to fight guys in practice. Fight them, Matt. Fight them. Like, hey, you suck. I'm going to effing fight you. I think a lot of stuff happens behind closed doors that we never hear about. So when we do hear about it, I think there's usually a reason why.
Well, look at Masai Ujiri. Was not going to put up with this shit with bad offers from L.A. or Miami. Nick Nurse and the organization, we're not going to put up with this shit from Pascal Siakam, you know, and it's both. This is tough love. We love this guy, but, you know, this is going to come out, and we are fine with that. And the development of any player, it ain't always linear.
Well, and progress is not a straight line, and it's such an important point. We don't know where he's going to wind up, and who's to say what path he takes to get there? We tend to like the simple paths because we can hit the check marks. You know, yeah. Check them off and just move on to the next one. Rookie of the year, 3-4 years later, pushing for an MVP. You know, after that, learning how to be a champion. Like, this is the usual arc. And with him, we still don't know who he is. He seems to be, this sounds presumptuous because I haven't spent any meaningful time with the guy, but he seems to be mentally young in the sense that it's not like he grew up and was coached up through AAU to be a superstar from the time he was 8. It seems like a lot of this success has come later in life, and that must be weird for a guy, or at least it could be. So I'm not ready to give up on Pascal just yet, but man, I got new red flags on him. Let's get back to Kyle for a second. Do you want him to be re-signed at this point?
Do I want him to? Sorry, I you dropped out for half a second. Do I want him to re-sign after this year?
Yeah.
Yes, of course, because if he resigns, then it's to a good deal. The Raptors aren't going to give him all the money. If that was their MO, then maybe they would have kept Norm Powell. But yes, I'd love to see Kyle Lowry back, but it's with the easy and predictable proviso that it's a deal that still works within their flexible structure.
It's the anti-Wendell Clark, it is the Wendell Clark. In the sense that you have to get mentally comfortable with the spot that your star has to go for you to get better. Like Wendell brought in Mats Sundin. It ushered in a whole new era of hockey. I'm kind of there too. If this was just a dry run for the summer where we say goodbye again, I'm kind of happy that at the very least the organization wasn't desperate to get rid of him and he wasn't desperate to leave.
It's almost with Lowry, there's no bad thing. Like, there's no bad result that can come here because Lowry gets it and embraces this city. The city embraces him. The team gave him, you know, a level of freedom and choice, and they treated him as a partner in this. There really is no bad way. The worst way is him just leaving at the end of this year, and, you know, that kind of stinks, but we're not going to be filled with vitriol.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think part of the way they're treating Lowry was lessons learned from how they treated DeMar?
No. The lesson that, like, because they did everything right with DeMar, and that's just part of the bad side of sport, the evil side of sports. If they could have got a really good deal for Lowry, they would have traded him. I just think the difference is that Lowry got the championship. Lowry was the second best player, so he is going to be afforded an even higher level of respect than what they gave DeMar DeRozan.
So I'm going to disagree with you a bit, although I can't prove it, which is nice. I think that the thing they did wrong with DeMar was, it sounds like they led him to believe one thing behind the scenes while they were busy working for another thing. Now, they didn't lie to him outright, but there is something to be said that's morally questionable about misleading. Mm-hmm. And my suspicion, without knowing this, but the report suggested, is that their reassurances to DeMar were misleading because they were working like hell to make a deal happen. They didn't think it would happen, but they were trying like hell. My feeling is with Lowry, they were probably really upfront with him and said, here's what's best for the team. And we want to make sure what's best for you. So let's get this all out in the open and let's work together. And because, you know, he's a grown man, he's 35 years old and he's already won a championship here. I imagine Lowry was, you know, more likely to oblige than someone else might in a different spot in their career. But I actually think the organization handled this really well. And I suspect, because the central parties are still involved, that there were some learnings around the DeMar DeRozan backlash. Because you remember how upset people were. Even though we got Kawhi, people were still upset.
They gave Lowry complete transparency. And that's rare in any business between employee and employer.
Mm-hmm. And I think that transparency is... You expressed it really well there. I think that transparency is what the Raptors learned about how you treat not just good players, but people who are your legendary players.
And that's what Lowry is. You know, he's the most important player of this franchise. He's the most important athlete in Toronto sports since Doug Gilmore.
Yeah. I think that's a crazy but totally fair comparison.
Yeah.
So do you want to get into the Norm deal at all, or...
Well, the Norm deal's fine. Gary Trent Jr., young guy, shoots the three at a really good clip. Has the potential to be a pretty decent defensive player. On the other side, I guess Portland is doing it in case CJ McCollum gets hurt, because what Portland needs is certainly more defense before they need more scoring, and maybe they didn't have enough to go get an Aaron Gordon.
Portland is in that weird spot where they're good, but not good enough. And I think this was just a deal that they could make. You're right, though. They would have done a lot better. I'm not convinced Aaron Gordon is going to push the Nuggets over the top. I'm not a huge believer in Aaron Gordon. I think the Vukovic is a much more interesting deal with Chicago. But
really? Because it's funny. Me, I go the other way. I go the other way because Denver already has the first thing you need, superstar talent. Yeah. They've got that with Jokic. Then they've got the other thing you need. Do you got a second guy? They do in Jamal Murray. Maybe not the ideal second guy, but a very good one. But what do they not have? Defense, 20th on defense in terms of efficiency. If Aaron Gordon is fine embracing the role of, I'm the guy that's going to make life hard for Kawhi and LeBron. I'm the guy who's going to do switching. I'm going to make life easier for my stars defensively. And, you know, when I'm open, hey, the good thing is Jokic is going to mean I'm going to get lots of open shots. If he embraces that role, it gives them an element they didn't have last season. And they've got a higher ceiling than the Bulls. Vucevic is a better player than Aaron Gordon, but Denver's got a much higher ceiling than the Bulls.
So I would agree, but I don't think, like, when you talk about which deal made which team better now and in the future, I would say the Bulls did better for themselves than the Nuggets did, because they did get the better player. The Nuggets have championship aspirations. If they would have gotten Kyle Lowry, and there had been rumors, or at least speculation, because he was a good player for them to get to play alongside Murray, kind of free Murray up and just let him play the Fred role, just, you know, play good off the ball and hit shots. I would have said that would have made them a championship, if not favorite, certainly contender. But adding Aaron Gordon, like, Aaron Gordon's not a great player. He's not a great player. And I'm not convinced that Jamal Murray is one either. So they have gotten better. They had a treasure trove of stuff to deal from, and they did a good job. But what Chicago did, I thought, was gutsy. I think they fleeced Orlando. They got a multiple-time All-Star who's going to sit perfectly along Zach LaVine. They gave up Wendell Carter Jr. You know, he's a good player, but okay. You know, like, they've got a... Now Chicago has a 1-2 punch, a legit All-Star 1-2 punch. I don't want to face that. Like, they're the team that we may have to leapfrog to get into the play-in.
See, this is a good one, because you and I, complete opposite. I have a higher opinion of Murray. I have a higher opinion of Aaron Gordon. And I think I have a slightly lower opinion of Vucevic. And maybe it's not fair, but he's put up some nice numbers. He's made some All-Stars on some pretty either mediocre or 7-seed, 8-seed Orlando Magic type of team. And he's already like 30 or 31, and it's not like Chicago. Zach LaVine's a good player, but it's not like that team's gone through the fires of the playoffs and has scared anyone. So I think Chicago did. I think Orlando did better because they want to go full rebuild. So yeah, we're on the opposite on this one.
Yeah. Okay. On so many levels. The one thing I will concede is that I'm not sure about Jamal Murray not being as good as people think, but that's because I think people discuss him as one of the best players in the NBA. You get excited over 50 points. You get excited over looking great in the bubble. He has certainly the potential to do it. He might again. I'm not as convinced. But I wouldn't be shocked if it did happen. I think what Orlando did was just... I want to get back to Orlando in a second. This is the second time I've teased this. And what Chicago did is, like, let's not forget, Chicago is a marquee city in the NBA.
Yeah.
And they haven't been. They've been run really poorly. They've made a bunch of bad draft decisions. They haven't been able to get back up on their feet. But now, and we'll see what happens with Markkanen. He's exciting, but there's drop-off there. Not rare for a guy of his skill set and player profile. But between LaVine and Vucevic, now what you have is a reason for somebody good to go there. Because what do agents love? Agents love another option. You know, they don't want to have the same four cities that they're competing. They want five cities that are suddenly competing for the best talent. And Chicago is a massive market with a massive fan base and massive profile. So I think what they finally had to do was just get their tires out of the mud, get another all-star player, and then start banging on doors and saying, look, man, you can be part of something exciting here. That's my opinion.
That's a good angle. Yeah.
Denver, on the other hand, went out and got a guy whose greatest distinction was getting ripped off in the slam dunk competition. Mm-hmm. What has Aaron Gordon really done that we say, wow, here's the kind of guy that when he has to face LeBron and Anthony Davis is really going to put Jokic over the top?
I think Aaron Gordon doesn't have to expend as much energy on the offensive end, and he can just be that defensive terror. It's like that's your job. That is your role. And sometimes players thrive when they're now in a winning environment and they're given a very specific task. Do this, you know, like Mongo sick balls. And that's what Aaron Gordon needs to do.
The path to this working is clear. It may not be taken, but it's clear. So I'll give you this. I don't think Denver did a bad job getting him. I think they would be better off with Lowry, but it's not like they got worse because they got Aaron Gordon. And they still have Michael Porter Jr. And at the end of the day, maybe it was going to take prying away somebody really good like that. You know, they've got their next player that they have to figure out how they're going to sign. Like, there's just, they're a smart franchise. In the absence of the Raptors winning, I would love to see them do well. If only because the sudden, like, how many stories are we going to get the Nikola Jokic make good stories for everybody who didn't write about him for the last 3 years?
Oh, a ton. And my question to you is, Who would you like to see win it all? Like, who makes, like, to me, the best story is either Portland, because Dame has stayed there the whole time.
Yeah.
And Dame's like, nope, I'm not leaving. On the other end, I'd love to see Milwaukee. Giannis is a guy who doesn't work out with LeBron or Durant in the offseason. He's like, no, 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 I'm going to do my own thing over here. I'd love to see Giannis give two middle fingers to the playoff narrative and just destroy Brooklyn. And I'd love to see Dame Lillard take the team to the NBA Finals. I'd be tickled pink if that happened.
Okay, so a couple of things here. It's hard for me to pick someone in the East because of the obvious reasons. I love your pick about Milwaukee. I think that's a really good one. And this one might kind of surprise you, but I don't hate the idea of Miami winning. I really think Jimmy Butler's reclamation has been pretty amazing.
Yep.
And we've learned a lot about Miami's quote-unquote culture. I think Bam Adebayo, not just a former Wildcat, but a really interesting young star.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always liked Victor Oladipo. I think what they managed to do, like, you know, I asked you in the last pod, would you rather have 1 year of Kyle Lowry or 1 year of Victor Oladipo? And you went with Lowry.
Yep.
And I went with Oladipo, and clearly Miami did too. That team could be devastating. So, and plus, you know what? They used to fight the Knicks, like in the old Van Gundy, Riley days.
Yeah, and but I, which side was I on, Bob?
No, I know. I know. That's why I love it.
Alan plus Houston. Alonzo,
pardon me?
I said, Alan Houston, take that, Miami. Game 5, 1999. Upset in the first round. Ah, oh, I remember exactly where I was when Alan Houston ended the Heat.
I loved Zoe till he broke my heart. Still hurting over that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've been talking about Orlando for the last little while. Here's why I wanted to say it. You know who the Raptors don't want to be in all this?
Who?
They don't want to be the Orlando Magic. Orlando had Dwight Howard, who at the time was considered the most exciting young player on the planet. And they did well with him. And then he left. And since he's left, they have never found their footing. Bad drafts, bad signings. They're just a team in search of an identity. And somehow you've turned sunny Florida into a destination that players want to avoid. And the worst case scenario, post Kyle, post whoever else winds up going, is that you just lose your identity. I think it's like Milwaukee has Giannis, and so you can always build around a superstar. That's an automatic identity, right? It just takes on the personality of your superstar. But in the absence of that, the organization has to really, like Denver. Denver looks like it would be a good place to play. You want to be Denver, you don't want to be Orlando. And the fear is, we lived, and you almost forget, you mentioned this the other day when we were talking about the losing streak, first time since like, what, 2002? That they lost this many in a row. This was a horrible franchise. They sucked. They were drawing up plans for a new arena on the back of cocktail napkins. Isaiah Thomas was trying to get a bigger piece of the pie. Like, it's just like Rob Babcock, just the deranged things that went on, playing at the dome with a gigantic tarp so that it looked smaller. like, it was just such a bad franchise. And now they are a model franchise. Don't become Orlando. Remember who you are. Keep doing smart things.
Well, there's one way that happens, and he won't talk about it.
Yeah, right.
He won't talk about it. Every other president, GM, executive in Toronto has been extended, all except for one. And my hero, Steve Simmons, during the Masai Ujiri media availability, came out, and his question was, everyone else is done. Why aren't you done? Are you staying here? Why won't you answer this? And Masai gave this uncomfortable, long laugh about it. And he said, well, of course I'm going to answer that question. And Steve just went, lovely. And the answer was a horrible one. You know, it was a great exchange. It was a great exchange from Steve Simmons. I get why some people don't like him. It was a great moment. But we're waiting for it, Masai.
Oh, man, that's funny.
By the way, find it on YouTube, Bob. The just type in Simmons, Masai, Q&A, okay. Whatever.
I will. It was great. I haven't seen it, but, you know, that's good. Eric Kareem, I think it was Eric Kareem, made an interesting point about the NBA, which is the real window for superstars is 2 to 3 years now. We used to think in terms of generations. Then we started thinking in terms of like 5, 6 years. But no matter what deal they sign, it seems pretty clear if things aren't working out after 2, maybe 3 years, players are on the move, which is both exciting and chaotic, but also really hard to build a team around. And in some ways, I wonder if Toronto isn't doing the smart thing by just making sure you always have a base to build on, because you never know when that superstar could land. Like, it's happened before. There's no reason to believe it couldn't happen again.
That's what they're doing. That's why they sacrificed not bringing back Ibaka and Gasol. How good would they look on this year's team? They did that in the name of Giannis, in the name of flexibility. You know why they traded Norm Powell for a younger, hopeful version of him? To keep flexibility. Everything is about, like, the Raptors are a weird, mushy middle. They're a mushy middle team that can still compete and entertain. And they're just waiting. They are just waiting to pounce on that next superstar. And until that next superstar comes, they'll just continue to develop the talents of a Siakam, an Ananobi, a Fred VanVleet. That's who they are.
You know, it's interesting. We just mentioned, it's a great point, Maddie. And it made me think of the Miami Heat, how they never were bad. They had LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, and then a bunch of other players that were, you know, varying ranges of good. But those three Hall of Famers. And between then and now, man, there's been a lot of change, but they've never been bad. And they've certainly never been dismal. And I think that's because, like you're saying, is they're always in the position to get better. It may not happen, but they're in a position to get better. It's smart coaching, it's smart management, and it's leaving yourself open to possibility. I love blackjack at the casino. And the key to blackjack is not getting great cards. It's making the most of your opportunities when you get great cards. The cards are the cards. They never change. But when you actually get a good card, you have to be prepared. And I think that's
how... You got to know when to double down. You got to know when to split.
Exactly. And sometimes you lose when you do that. Like, maybe the double down on Giannis was Masai playing the odds and he lost. But he didn't do the wrong thing. It just didn't work. Sometimes the right thing doesn't work.
It's true. The one thing I will say about Miami, the only pushback I ever give on Miami, and they are a great, they are a great team. They are incredibly well run. But they also have the one advantage that is unique, especially in basketball.
Sunshine and no taxes?
Yeah, and just geography. You know, you don't have that in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers has been in Green Bay forever. Drew Brees has been in New Orleans forever. Not like people are flocking to be in Milwaukee or with the New Orleans Pelicans. It is a unique thing in the NBA when you get more star clusters in limited geographical locations. And Miami will always have that because the Lakers are a horribly run organization for the most part over the last 10 years. But they've got the Pacific Ocean as in Hollywood and not far from Silicon Valley and all these things up their sleeve. Miami has that as well. No state tax, sun, the Atlantic, South Beach, sexy spot to be if you are 26 with money.
Well, that's kind of bullshit too, though, right? Because these leagues have more than one team in Florida. And we just finished talking about how Orlando was a disaster. But if Orlando was well-run, that would be a destination because they have the same sunshine.
It's not as sexy. Orlando's got golf courses and conference centers. It doesn't have South Beach.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have the same cachet.
The Rays were extremely well-run and have had a ton of success. And you go down the highway, whichever one it is, to Miami. And the Marlins have been lucky in that they bought a championship. But in terms of just how they're run, despite Derek Jeter, they stink. Like, I really do think it's franchised. Look, you were right about this. The difference between Florida and Milwaukee, yeah, totally. But there's a lot of potentially nice destinations out there. It comes down to culture. Like, the Anaheim Angels stink, and the LA Dodgers are awesome. They're 50 miles away from each other.
Oh, no, Bob, you need to, well, except for the Lakers. They're just poorly run. And for the most part, you also have to be a smart organization. But there are certain teams that are always going to have a clear and distinct advantage in the NBA. And it's not based on whoever the GM is or the coach. It's your longitude and latitude.
See, I disagree with that, too, because the Clippers were a joke for a year, and they literally shared an arena with L.A. It wasn't the city of L.A. It was the imprimatur of the Lakers that was the difference. And you're right about
that. But they had a tough team. They had a tough team that made the playoffs before Paul George and Kawhi Leonard got there. And, you know, they had at the very least accrued enough assets and some young players and things like that to make deals work.
I think just to sort of pivot just a wee bit here, of all the teams that didn't get Kyle Lowry, the one that's going to regret it the most is L.A.
Yep. Lakers. Yep. The Clippers. The Lakers.
I strongly suspect the Clippers was never on the table. I do not think Masai would have made that deal. I think that is scorched earth right now.
Yeah. And you know, you're probably right. My bigger picture, it's not really about Lowry. I'm fascinated with the Clippers because after last season, Kawhi Leonard said, we got to get smarter. We need a better point guard. And their answer is to bring in Rondo. Rondo was good in the playoffs last year, but that's because you're playing with LeBron James, who is the greatest facilitator in the game today. Mm-hmm. That was their answer. And Kawhi's an unrestricted free agent this year. There is so much pressure on the Clippers.
Yeah, that's actually a good argument. I hadn't really taken Kawhi's free agency into account. I'm just assuming he's going to stay there, but maybe not. We haven't heard any rumblings of him wanting to leave, and it seems like there's only rumblings around Kawhi. That's why I'm assuming he must be wanting to stay. They don't seem shy to let it be known they're not unhappy. We haven't heard that yet. But it's a good point, actually. I think both those teams have a chance to feel bad about it, but Davis's injury is serious. LeBron is a truck, but even trucks age. They really could have used Lowry.
They could have, yes. 100% the Lakers. If Rondo was their third banana last year and this year it's Lowry, I mean, it's such a jump. I mean, it's funny. The West just might come down to if LeBron and Anthony Davis are healthy, it's going to be hard for anyone.
I don't blame Philly for not doing it because I think they got George Hill for almost nothing.
Yeah.
And the same with Miami. I don't blame them for not doing it because they got Victor Oladipo for almost nothing. Houston's a tire fire. But, you know, Masai stood his ground and other teams caved. And so the other teams, you know, they made it easier to pick up those alternative players. But I just think that because LA and the Lakers got nobody, like at least the Clips got Rondo, there's a chance it could work out. But LA stood pat and they're going to get Andre Drummond off the waiver wire or after he gets bought out. I don't see that. They're playing fast and loose, and they've got LeBron for how many more years before he's just too old? Time is now, guys. Now's not. Rob Pelinka, is he even a good GM? Like, he got Anthony Davis, but wasn't that really clutch sports?
Yeah, that was. Now, listen, I've been ripping on the Lakers, rightfully so. They had a good offseason last year, you know, when they brought in Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell. Like, they did good things last year. But yeah, Anthony Davis, that was just because LeBron was there. And that was those guys' machinations. It had nothing to do with the front office of the Lakers.
We're at 46 minutes, Matt. Do you want to get off of basketball and some other stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a top five for you. Do you want to do a Jeff Pollock while I just get my notes ready?
You go get your notes ready. I don't need notes for this. If you need a lawyer, and trust me, at some point you are, it's kind of impossible not to. You might as well have a good lawyer. You might as well have a lawyer who will always get back to you, who works at a small, intimate, family-run style sort of law firm. And by the way, his wife's a really good accountant as well. He's our sponsor. He's our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. The phone number is 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Again, the website, jeffpollock.com, Jeff with a G.
So sad news yesterday, Jessica Walter passed away.
Oh,
she was the matriarch of the Bluth family, mm-hmm. and best known to everybody. She's so funny, so funny. Kind of like just a classic, say it half drunk at the Christmas table, taking withering shots at everybody kind of humor.
Yeah.
But it made me think about how she's also the voice of Archer's mom on Archer. And you don't watch Archer, am I right?
Oh, no. No, I do. I do. I haven't watched all of it, but I've watched like 30, 40 episodes of Archer.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Well, we're going to have a top four. Cause I actually thought that you weren't watching Archer and I was going to make sure that you did check it out. So I've got top four shows that I think Matt should watch.
All right. And before you start, Bob, I was rewatching about 5-6 episodes of Arrested Development last night, which was far more entertaining than that Maple Leafs game was. God, was she funny. And like, it's not about like, oh, someone at her age, but find me how many people at that age were just banging it out every second in terms of how funny they were. She nailed that role. She lived that role. No one else could have done that on Arrested Development the way she did.
It reminds me of Bea Arthur. Bea Arthur was really
fun. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, number four, The Mandalorian. Number three, WandaVision. And you can tie those together and just say, would you just get Disney Plus, you cheap bastard? Number two, BoJack Horseman. The series is already over, but Matt, it's so funny and it's so perfect for you and you would love it. And when you just freaking watch it so we can have jokes in common. And then number one show that Matt should finally watch is The Wire, because anybody like not.
Wait, hold on. Wait, I've watched every episode of The Wire.
Have you?
Of course I have. Omar is one of the greatest. The boat season's the worst. The best season's probably the one with the kids. Bob, if we're going to go over this list, let's go over this list. I finally watched The Mandalorian. Someone else has a Disney account, and so I banged it out before I got caught. So I have thoughts on The Mandalorian.
So I've only got two shows that you haven't watched on five shows that Matt should watch?
Yeah.
Wow, that stinks.
Yeah, WandaVision, have not seen. I've seen a couple episodes of BoJack, but I haven't really, you know, gone a full into it as of yet.
It's funny. Cece tanked a math test when she was doing it at home the other day, and the teacher let us know, and I kind of wanted to laugh. I'm like, well, at least this proves we're not doing the work for her at home. I kind of feel that way now. Is like, if anyone thought we prepared this sort of thing, it wasn't spontaneous. Well, guess what?
Guess what, you losers? You're wrong.
You're wrong. I have no clue what's going on.
Took me a while to get into The Mandalorian. Like the first bunch of episodes, I was like, okay, I'm enjoying this. It's nice having the universe here, but I wasn't blown away.
You know what the problem is with these shows? And it's not so bad in Better Call Saul, but you can even see it there too, is it's a bit of a cheat because the real dramatic moments aren't necessarily built out of character development, but it's like, ooh, who else is going to show up?
Yep.
And that's not, like, that's all fan service, and I'm not saying they shouldn't do it because people like it, but Better Call Saul almost felt like it was going to be that, but then just the stories became so compelling. You could see the difference between waiting for Luke Skywalker to show up and waiting for Gus Fring to show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one is set up and the other one is kind of just waiting for someone to be jettisoned in. WandaVision's a bit that way too, but both the MCU and the Star Wars universes have taken on just like their own, like they're just so, it's almost like there's a cottage industry of interpreting what they're all going to do next, you know?
Oh, God, is there ever. Like someone wrote a huge piece about the great thing about The Mandalorian was finally the Star Wars universe created a positive father-son relationship. It's like, listen, George Lucas wasn't trying to make sure that the family structure was intact. He was making a Western with lasers and things blowing up. I love how sometimes someone's going to write some huge piece like about something that the creators probably never even considered.
I remember hearing George Lucas's direction to his actors was hit the mark and talk faster.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was really that into subtext. It's funny though, because the genius of that story is not, the genius of that story was how deep those mythological roots ran and how closely to sort of great mythological stories he patterned his Star Wars universe, like the first few episodes. In fact, you know, I got some good ones for you here. Darth Vader, do you know where that comes from, the name?
I'm sure it's probably some old like Shogun samurai movie.
German, Vader, father.
Of course.
And do you know what Chewbacca is?
He's a hell of a sidekick and a good pilot.
Comes from the Russian word sabaka, which means dog.
Oh.
He planned all of this out really carefully to the point where it was kind of telegraphed, really. It's kind of almost hokey. It's almost paint by numbers, but he did it so well. You know, the archetypes just took over. In terms of The Mandalorian, what I liked about it was kind of slow. And then what I didn't like about it was the same episode over and over again, just waiting for a new guest star to drop in.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you help us with this side mission, and we'll help you get one step closer.
It was almost, it was very episodic that way. But it's funny, like, was Pedro Pascal a good actor in that? It's hard to tell.
It's really hard to tell. Like, he did the job. He did the job. He did the job well. I have no idea if he's a good actor. I like just the voice, the pacing of him was excellent. Bill Burr. Bill Burr, The Range. One of the best comedians who's not afraid. You know, one moment he's in Better Call Saul. The next moment, he's a scoundrel in The Empire.
I liked Bill Burr. I was thinking about some of the side characters that I really enjoyed. I thought Gia Carano was good.
She was.
You know, I don't think she was great, but I don't think it's the kind of role where you have to be great. You know, it's one of those roles where you have to fit the costume. Like, she just needed to be really super athletic.
Yeah.
She's in a movie directed by Steven Soderbergh. I'm trying to remember what it's called right now. It was quite good, actually. She's the female hero in it. Like, kind of, I think she's a bounty hunter or something. Anyway.
I can't help you with this one. Yeah.
Sorry. No, but, like, you know what? She was pretty good. She was good enough. Some of the acting is pretty hokey, but you saw it, and that's the real takeaway here.
And, you know, Amy Sedaris, always fun when she shows up.
That's a great point. Yeah, she was really amazing. It is always fun when she shows up.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing, Matt. We're going to start doing two of these a week, and I think it's going to be a lot easier and a lot more fun for us if we don't do just sports. So you got to pick a show that we can both watch, something new, because everybody now just gets together online and does episode recaps and breakdowns. And I want to do that with you, Matt, the way we do games. But I need you to pick a show.
Magnificent Miss Maisel?
Okay, it's 5 years old, so the episode recaps are going to lose a little bit of sting?
No, the last season just happened. By the way, Bob, I'm not good for this. I watch old TV shows. I watch old TV shows, movies, and sports. If you want to talk about either Tim Donaghy or Jack Donaghy, I'm here for that.
Timely, man.
Thank you.
Timely.
Bye, Bob.
Are we going?
Oh, that would have been a good. That would have been a good abrupt. That would have been a good abrupt ending.
Yeah, it was so abrupt. I had no idea it was coming. I had another point to make, though.
Do it. Sorry.
You are in the media. You have a responsibility to your audience to at least watch a new show.
I watched The Mandalorian.
No. That's 2 years old.
What the hell's new then? What the hell's going on?
What about movies?
In and of itself.
Okay. How about this? Well, it's only on streaming, so I don't think you'll actually watch it because I doubt you'll get HBO Max, but we should be doing Godzilla versus Kong. Would you just get these streaming services, you cheat?
I have a whole bunch of them. I've got Amazon Prime. I've got Crave. I've got Netflix. I've got, some of these ones. Watch the movie in and of itself.
What does that even mean? What's the point if I can't talk about it?
You can watch it, Bob. It's on everywhere. It's on like Crave. It's all over the place.
Wait, is the movie called In and of Itself?
That is the movie, Bob. Trust me.
For giving me advice on how to watch a film, like watch it for its own purposes, in and of itself.
In and of itself. It's very new. It's very inspiring. You will thank me later.
Is the Mako and Cause universe going to care about it, though, or is it another one of your indie films?
Little from door A, little from door B, but trust me. With your background, you are going to be, I'll just say you'll be impressed.
All right. How about this? Our 200th episode is coming up.
Yep.
Why don't we get people to recommend the show we should watch next? We can pick from it. We're not obliged to pick to go with any specific one, but people can give us a range what they would want to hear us talk about. How about that?
All right. Our next episode is our 200th. So
before I forget, Buffalo Phil had a good idea on Twitter. I'm not tweeting, but I am reading tweets, and he had a good one. And it was, we should do all listener questions.
Sure. Let's tweet it out for the next bunch of days and start collecting.
And maybe we should try to have a guest. Can we Skype three people?
We're out of time. We're now producing. The last minute of the show is producing. We'll talk about it off. We may be able to. Neither one of us is that smart when it comes to technology. I put it at 50-50 at best. Bob, in and of itself, and have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.